そうじゃん。Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
Having a hard time finding your favorite show on shortwave or satellite? The Christian Media Newspaper now provides program guides to all the top Christian, patriot, and alternative radio programs. 4 times a year, they print an updated shortwave and satellite program guide. Christian Media is only $20 a year and includes news and interviews on Christian books, video, music, and broadcasting. Subscribe now and receive a free Christian music compact disc with your paid order. To subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. Once again, to subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Call now.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're going to hear today, probably going to find very upsetting. But anyway, you need to hear it. This was sent to me by former United States Congressman George Hanson. Let me say that again. This was sent to me by former United States Congressman George Hanson. His head had been repeatedly smashed, the skull crushed in 3 places by blows from a heavy metal baton. His throat was cut, torn by a garrote. There were repeated burns from an electrical stun gun on his head, shoulder, and at the base of his spine. There were massive cuts, bruises, and abrasions all over his body, and even torturous marks on the bottom of his feet. Kenneth Trent Abue had literally been beaten to death in an Oklahoma federal prison, beaten front and back from the top of his head to the soles of his feet. Yet the United States Department of Justice claims he committed suicide, and even more incredibly, they claim that his wounds were all self-inflicted or that his family mutilated his body. This is not only ghastly and supremely insensitive cover-up of a heinous murder by officers of the United States government, but a position totally rejected by the Oklahoma State Medical Examiner. The Department of Justice official version of Trenta Dew's death is that he hung himself from a thin plastic air vent with a bed sheet, but the injuries to his body do not support this story. Trenta Dew's family believes without a doubt that he was tortured and killed by federal agents, and that this brutal murder is being covered up by the Department of Justice, a stonewalling now 21 months old. You may remember, ladies and gentlemen, when I covered this incident when it first took place on the Hour of the Time. Congressman Hansen continues, "Here's how the federal government hides its dirty business. First, they quickly and illegally eliminate the crime scene by mopping up and removing all evidence of a crime. Second, they brazenly prevent legitimate entry to the crime scene by the medical examiner and all other independent investigators. Third, they make sure no surveillance cameras were working at the time of the murder and that no other pictures were taken prior to the sanitizing of the crime scene. Four, they finally admit friendly federal agents such as the FBI after the crime scene had been sanitized, and they go through the motions of an investigation, such as tossing certain bloody clothing in the trunk of their car for delivery to the crime lab weeks later." That's right, folks. The evidence stayed in the trunk of their cars in the hot sun for weeks before it was ever delivered to the crime lab. And, of course, we've revealed on this broadcast that it was revealed even in the establishment major media, they couldn't hide it anymore, that the FBI crime lab was a fraud for many, many years. In the trunks of their car for delivery to the crime lab some weeks later, after it had been contaminated, and when they finally got around to it, and not before. Fifth, they blame their hideous behavior on the victim or his family. Sixth, they cajole and intimidate the next of kin into approving cremation to burn the evidence of their evil handiwork, and that failing, they attempt to alter the name and circumstances of the victim to indigence to enable their action without family approval. Seventh, they quickly retire the warden and ship all knowledgeable employees to other facilities so they are lost and not available for either questioning or inquiries. Eighth, they fall back on the bureaucratic buddy system, calling in favors on previous cover-ups that certain involved employees have benefited from. Ninth, they beguile the inquiries of certain senators and congressmen prodded by constituents by providing deceptive and distorted information and the occasional use of the big lie, relying heavily on their naivete and lack of follow-through. Tenth, they stonewall all citizen and media inquiries with no response or a nothing response, a treatment they are also giving to the powerful chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Orrin Hatch, in response to his demand for an explanation from Attorney General Janet Reno. The Justice Department has given the Trenta Dew torture and killing the full arrogant cover-up treatment, all 10 barrels of it. It is this same federal law enforcement and judicial arrogance that has given us Waco and Ruby Ridge and continues to give us IRS seizure brutality, drug enforcement SWAT team killings and atrocities, not to mention the thousands of unexplained military deaths and the brutality and killings by the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Kenneth Michael Trenta Dew, 45 years of age, born in 1950, was a survivor, not one to commit suicide. In fact, he had everything to live for and no indications of thinking otherwise. He had successfully served a 7-year prison term for trouble he got into as a young man and turned his life around over the next 8 years with steady work, marriage, and a brand new son just born at the time he was arrested for a technicality involved in his parole. Trent Adieu had been at the Federal Transfer Center at Oklahoma City for just 2 days waiting for his parole hearing when he was killed. During those 2 days, he had a routine psychological examination which showed that he had no suicidal tendencies. He also did not have a history of attempted suicide or depression. More importantly, during that same 2-day period, Trent Adieu had extensive telephone conversations with his family, including his sister-in-law, brother, and mother. In all of these conversations, Trent Adieu sounded normal to his family. Trent Adieu was not otherwise despondent or depressed, nor could he have reason to be depressed, since his stay at the transfer center would not likely exceed 2 weeks. Nevertheless, the Department of Justice claims that Trent Adieu took his own life during a 20-minute window between bed checks in the early morning hours of August 21, 1995. The question the Justice Department continues to evade is how Trent Adieu could beat himself to a pulp, smash his own skull in 3 places, hit himself in the head repeatedly and in other spots with a stun gun, cut and even tear out his own throat, stomp on his own face with a boot, bruise himself terribly under both arms, and still manage to hang himself in a brand new state-of-the-art hang-proof cell, all in a period of less than 20 minutes and without making any noise to alert anyone. Other questions also begging an answer are: where did the boot come from, the stun gun, or the device to slash and rip his throat? And why was the bed undisturbed if he was hung with the sheet? And finally, why was the blood which coated the floor and most of the room not found anywhere near the reported place of hanging? Trent Adieu was brutally tortured and murdered, and his family wants to know why and by whom. And they deserve to know. Most of the family live in Southern California, and they fought long and hard for nearly 2 years through their own senators and congressmen and those of other relatives in other states, with little success against a stonewalling and lying Justice Department. Trent Adieu's brother, Jesse Trent Adieu, is a Salt Lake City trial lawyer and constituent of Senator Orrin Hatch, which helped get the powerful Senate Judicial Committee involved. Jesse has also had a good response from the so-called major media and even Amnesty International, but the Justice Department stonewall continues. The U.S. Citizens Human Rights Commission has agreed to enter this case due to not merely requests, but in response to the overwhelming documentation and evidence which has been presented. We are planning an immediate grassroots citizen voice to force the needed pressure and documented abuse before Congress to get the necessary hearings and investigations to smash this stonewall of the Justice Department and the national disgrace of killings and brutality it has been hiding for years. As National Chairman of the Citizens Human Rights Commission, I am pleased to announce that we are actively collecting well-documented cases of government murder and violence against citizens wherever it occurs. We are producing and distributing videotapes to all comers, all corners of the country, to Congress and other proper authorities, graphically exposing the murderous and brutal government hand with cases like my own and that of Kenneth Trent Adieu. We are actively encouraging all concerned people to educate and inspire their senators and congressmen to push for the earliest possible committee hearings. And we strongly encourage people everywhere to provide the needed support to quickly win this battle. It's a matter of life or death for thousands of Americans. And if it can happen to Mr. Trent Adieu, it can and might happen to you. For this is exactly the kind of thing that the socialist Hitler instigated as a policy in Nazi Germany against his political enemies, anyone who dared to speak the truth. blacks, Poles, Jews, gypsies, Christians, Buddhists, anyone who did not fit the socialist Hitler's idea of who deserved to live. That should give you some idea, ladies and gentlemen, why President William Jefferson Clinton named me, William Cooper, in a White House memo, which Rush Limbaugh read on the air, as the most dangerous radio host in America. You can arm the greatest army in this world with as many automatic weapons as you wish. They are not even 1/1000th as dangerous as the last 15 minutes of this broadcast. If you like movies that make you cry, ladies and gentlemen, and I know some people do, if you like movies that bring up the emotion in your chest, make you feel, and if you want further substantiation of the terrorist forces of the socialists in charge of our government today, go see Waco, The Rules of Engagement. You will see absolute proof provided by the government itself in their own films, documentation, testimony, and many other things, that the Branch Davidians were in fact murdered. Murdered. The name of this film is Waco, The Rules of Engagement. It was made by a bunch of liberal producers who wanted to counteract what they called the propaganda of the right-wing extremists in this country. They were going to expose us all as liars because of what we were saying happened in Waco, Texas, and what they discovered made them absolutely sick, ill, disgusted. For what they discovered, ladies and gentlemen, these liberal producers, was that we were right in every single thing that we ever told you. The government had no reason to raid those people. They did fire first on February the 21st. They lied to the Branch Davidians and to the world and to the press and to the president and probably even to Janet Reno, although I don't see how they could have gotten away with that. It's probably true. And then they murdered them and destroyed the evidence and burned everything to the ground in order to cover up all of their lies and their crimes. And then they told the world that these poor, innocent people committed suicide. Waco, the rules of engagement, proves it to you. Hordes of liberals have been flocking to see this documentary. And they come out raging, angry, crying, tears flowing down their face. You can see it. You can see it, ladies and gentlemen. It is now playing. Actually, it will start tomorrow. It will start tomorrow at the Cinema Village, 594 Broadway, New York, New York. The Cinema Village, 594 Broadway, New York, New York. It will be showing daily from June 13th through the 20th. And it may show past the 20th if the seats are full with each show. It will show at the Florida Film Festival in Maitland, Florida, June 18th. We don't know exactly where that's going to be held, but you can call the Maitland, Florida Chamber of Commerce, and they can probably get that information for you. The Florida Film Festival, Maitland, Florida, showing June 18th. The Tower Theater, that's the Tower Theater, 876 East 900 South Street, Salt Lake City, Utah. That's the Tower Theater, Salt Lake City, Utah, showing June 20th. June 20th. The Key Theater, 1325 and a half, Wisconsin Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., showing daily from June 20th through the 27th. And they tell us that if the seats are full through all these showings, they will continue to show it past the 27th. The Coolidge Corner, Brookline, Massachusetts, showing daily June 27th through July 4th. That's the Coolidge Corner, Brookline, Massachusetts, showing daily June 27th through July 4th. The Magic Theater, Nevada City, California. The Magic Theater, Nevada City, California, showing daily July 4th through the 7th. July 4th through the 7th. The University Village Cinemasters Theaters, 1201 University Avenue, Riverside, California, will be showing in September. We do not have the dates. As soon as we get them, we will announce them on this broadcast. The Denver Film Festival, Denver, Colorado. We don't know the address where it will be shown, but it will be showing from October 23rd through the 30th. October 23rd through the 30th. And we will keep you up to date where this film is being shown throughout the country. As long as it is ever being shown, and if it's ever going to be shown on television, we'll let you know about that also. If it is ever made available in the video stores, we will let you know about that. You might want to call your local TV and radio stations and ask them why they are silent about this, why they are not talking about this film. Ask them why. They won't tell you the truth, folks, but I will. The press is controlled by the socialists that own the press. They are also very embarrassed, ladies and gentlemen, because they accepted the lies given to them by the BATF, the FBI, the Justice Department, the President of the United States, and the United States government, all during the so-called Waco siege and the Waco massacre, and have been silent ever since because they just flat out lied to the American people. They don't want to admit that, for one. And number two, if they tell the truth, they'll get fired. Bet on it. That's why more and more Americans are switching to alternative media, such as the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network, The Hour of the Time, Relevance Magazine, Veritas Newspaper, and many, many, many more throughout the country. Here's a letter, ladies and gentlemen. Dear Bill, I'm writing this letter to confirm the takeover of our press. During the debate about gun control and the elimination of all so-called assault rifles in Connecticut, I wrote a letter to the Journal Inquirer comparing murders to a national report by type of weapon utilized, indicating that all rifles accounted for only a very small portion of the total, about 2% if I remember correctly. Using the Pareto system, you would take the total and divide it into each category. Thus, you would divide all murders into those done by rifles, pistols, knives, clubs, and etc. I indicated in my letter to them that they were starting at the wrong end, the least deadly, and apparently working their way upwards. They did not acknowledge receipt of this letter, nor print it. Now that I have read your book, Behold the Pale Horse, I know the reason they fear the truth. I have been searching for a long time for someone to come out and say what you said in this book, but it seems to me that you left out the most important chapter, what can and what should we do about it. I read that the United States is the most heavily armed country in the world. Each household has a 90% chance of a gun being found in it. I also read in the Spotlight that a test was given to the military to see which ones would use arms against the common people who would refuse to comply with a new law banning all guns. The percentage was extremely high that would. Are they brainwashing our troops? Troops that came from the people they would be attacking instead of protecting? I was stunned by your background as compared to mine. I also was a member of the DMLA and served in the United States Navy as an AMH-2 from January 1959 until January 1963. I hunted with a .22 caliber rifle at my grandmother's farm in northeastern Pennsylvania. While in the Navy, I joined the Masonic Lodge located in Enfield, Connecticut, by courtesy at Toms River, New Jersey. Later, I went up the Scottish Rite to 32nd degree and then to the Shrine. My father was equal to me, but he went up the other way, which included the Knight Templar. There was no one more patriotic than he. If he had heard anything like you wrote in your book, it would have certainly shook him up. That you were chosen for intelligence because of your DMLA background could be true, since we all tend to look after those closest to us and have sworn an oath to such. My son served aboard the same ship as Randy between 1993 and 1995. I also used my GI Bill to go to college, graduating with a B.S. degree in business administration, majoring in management. I worked at Pratt & Whitney Aircraft as an industrial engineer until I was laid off almost 2 years ago and forced to take their retirement package. I went on many interviews, but could not find anyone who would hire me. A little age discrimination, I guess. My ex-boss, who had quit his job, telephoned me about a position available at Scan Optics where he worked, and I took the job. Is NAFTA, I hope I've got this spelt correctly, the tearing down of taxation between the United States, Canada, and Mexico part of this plan, whereby they are planning to put all our workers either out of work or having to work at the lowest possible wage? I myself do not buy the argument that this was or is being done to save jobs. The United States could merely throw up high tariff walls and sell what we make inside the USA. Of course, this will eliminate any trade outside the U.S., but we could survive this. I hope I haven't wasted much of your time. Sincerely, Emmett. No, Emmett, you haven't wasted my time, and I read every single letter that I ever get personally. Personally. It takes a lot of my time, but I do it. And yes, you're absolutely right about NAFTA, and you left out GATT. GATT is also a part of it. And the purpose, eventually, NAFTA and GATT and many other things combined, is to eliminate the middle class according to the tenets of the Communist Manifesto written by the great socialist Marx and Engels, and bring about the redistribution of wealth from those who have to those who have not, to level the playing field and create one class. They don't tell you that it will actually be two, the rulers and then the ruled. In an enslavement of all humanity in the world under a socialist one-world totalitarian government. Yes, it's true. And I might also say, Emmett, that your father knows exactly what I wrote in my book, and probably you know quite a bit of it also if you went into the Shrine. The pretense that innocence cannot be accepted here, because I have done the research. And unless you and your father both are just absolutely brain dead and have studied nothing of what you are a part of, you have to know. And I hope that you will help us in doing something about it. May sound a little harsh to some of you, But all you get on this broadcast is the truth. I don't care who it hurts or helps, even if it hurts me. And you'd better understand that. I'm about freedom. I'm about preserving, saving freedom. I'm about the individual is more important than any whole ever. And anyone who thinks otherwise is about enslaving individuals for the good of the whole. And any time you enslave individuals for the good of the whole, that whole isn't worth having, unless it's a hole in the ground that you're going to put garbage into and then bury. Don't worry, says the media. There are no such things as black helicopters. And certainly there are no United Nations military forces inside American territory. This is just conspiracy, wacko stuff. This has always been the constant refrain of ABC, the Allied Broadcasting Communists, CBS, the Communist Broadcasting Service, NBC, the National Broadcasting Communists, and CNN, the Communist News Network, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the other media communist clones. Percent of all of the media is owned and controlled by less than 5 corporations. Even the New American, the so-called Patriot magazine published by the John Birch Society, which is a farce, has joined in the chorus. Recently, the magazine ran an article bashing patriots and other groups and declaring that there is no evidence of UN troops on U.S. soil. Uh-oh. See, they shouldn't have done that. They got caught with their pants down. Oops. Apparently, at least one establishment media mouthpiece forgot they were supposed to keep a lid on things. Because in the Washington Times, ladies and gentlemen, of March 31st, 1997, let me say that again so you can find it, the Washington Times, March 31st, 1997, a piece entitled, and I quote, this is the exact headline, I quote, uh-oh, black choppers, end quote, was published, and here's what was reported in that article. Quote, Hollywood had all the plunging necklines and suspense on Oscar night, but for the real drama, you had to be at the United Nations around sunset a week ago, a squadron of black helicopters, the kind conspiracy buffs say are favored by UN generals bent on world domination, flew along the East River past the Tower of Babel, the UN building, and that's said tongue-in-cheek by this article. At least one surprised New Yorker called United Nations headquarters to find out why. As spokesman Juan Carlos Brand put it, a squadron of black helicopters, maybe with the United Nations insignia, was flying in formation down the East River toward the United Nations. The helicopters were assigned by Canada to the United Nations peacekeeping office and were en route from Montreal to Port-au-Prince, Haiti, on an overland flight plan. United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan recommended to the Security Council last week that the peacekeeping mission to Haiti be extended through July. The new UN chief makes admission. Yes, admits the Washington Times, United Nations forces do employ black helicopters. I wonder if the editor-in-chief of the Washington Times will get his hand slapped over this little disclosure. Well, if so, then the Associated Press also needs to be disciplined by the censors, for on February the 8th, 1997, the Associated Press reported astonishing comments by Kofi Annan, the Secretary General of the United Nations, virtually admitting a United Nations scheme to control the United States of America militarily. Annan remarked, quote, I had to reassure some members of Congress that they need not fear a United Nations takeover of the United States. Even if we did take control of America, I wasn't sure we could hold it, end quote.
How revealing, ladies and gentlemen. Anand was referring to Patriot reports of the United Nations scheme fueled by the elite to take over America. Notice the Secretary General's words, quote, "I wasn't sure we could hold it," end quote. Kofi Annan, an African diplomat, is married to a woman whose wealthy Swedish family is closely allied with the Illuminati's Rothschild dynasty. He was awarded the United Nations job by agreeing to be a puppet and play the dummy for the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and their internationalist Illuminist cartel. With Annan's latest slip of the tongue, he may not be Secretary General much longer. You see, there are black helicopters. They belong to the United Nations peacekeeping forces. Many of them are based on United States soil, on United States military bases. They are black. They do practice maneuvers over American cities and over the rural areas of America. They have been spotted, photographed, videotaped, and filmed by hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And I have seen them myself on many, many, many occasions. And we receive video footage, film, pictures in numbers that I probably couldn't count, here sent to us by concerned citizens all over this country all the time. So the next time that you want to poo-poo somebody about black helicopters, if I were you, I'd make sure I knew what I was talking about before I opened my mouth. Because you're going to look like a real dummy. Because if that's what you really think, you are a real dummy. That is.
part of me at the least of green through the smiles of me. Stay on.
V.I. Lenin, the founder of the old Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR, the Soviet Union, if you will, said democracy is indispensable to socialism, and Gorbachev quotes him in his book Perestroika as he calms the fears of worldwide communism and tells them that it's all a deception, that there will be a winning of the war by socialism, and in the near future, as a new global system takes over the world. Read it. You can order it from any bookstore. It's called Perestroika. Mikhail Gorbachev wrote it. You know, the guy that you all think is so great, was the head of the KGB that committed unbelievable atrocities against people, and then was the top dog of the Soviet Union, who supposedly caused its collapse and brought its democracy. What a joke. Shall the U.S. ban single-family dwellings? Well, John Meredith of the American Policy Center discussed what he termed the radical green agenda to restructure American society. And in particularly, he discussed a report by the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, Community Sustainability Agendas for Choice-Making in Action, which calls for the elimination of single-family dwellings, curbing suburbs, reducing the population's meat consumption, imposing population control techniques, and more. Everything that I wrote about in my book, Behold a Pale Horse, that would be implemented in the future, at the time that I wrote it, it was the future, is all in here. This document, Meredith said, was submitted to the June 1996 Habitat II United Nations Conference in Istanbul as official United States policy, as official United States policy, as official United States policy. Meredith also discussed his group's fax alert system designed to send information to interested members of the public. You can contact John Meredith at 703-925-0881. That's 703-925-0881. John Rissler of the Rutherford Institute described cases of Americans, excuse me, folks, a little tickle in my throat, had to turn down the pot and cough there. Please forgive me. Ron Rissler of the Rutherford Institute described cases of Americans whose right to practice religion has been blocked, saying that many people allege that these cases are rare. Rissler noted that all the cases he is discussing were reported to the Rutherford Institute between May 19th through the 23rd, a time period in which the Rutherford Institute received 245 requests for legal assistance on religious freedom grounds. Among the cases Rissler discussed, one In Minnesota, elementary school students were told that they could participate in a talent show. A child tried to sing a religious song but was blocked. 2. In Louisiana, school children were told to write about Easter. One child wrote about Jesus and the resurrection. The teacher crossed out the word Jesus and told the child that she must replace the word Jesus with bunny rabbit, or the essay would not be displayed along with the rest of the students. 3. In Texas, 2 employees of a nonprofit organization were terminated after they anointed a company door with oil during a prayer meeting. The violation cited on the termination papers was destruction of company property. 4. In Georgia, a student at a public community college received a failing grade in a painting assignment when he included the words Jesus saves in the background of the painting. Before the art teacher noticed the message in the background, the student had been given an A on the project. 5. In California, the father of a fifth grade student contacted the Rutherford Institute after his daughter was singled out by her teacher for her religious beliefs. In the classroom, the teacher discussed the coming out episode of the television sitcom Ellen with the students, stating her opinion that Ellen was brave and a hero. When the child stated that she disagreed with the teacher's assessment, she was pulled out of the classroom and told that no matter what her parents taught her, she should be open-minded and listen to other people's viewpoints. Oh, my goodness. My goodness. And that's enough of that. Here's a letter to me from William in Florida. He's an honorably discharged major, United States Air Force, retired. He says, what does Peter Salinger and John Swinton, chief of staff of the New York Times, and David Brinkley have in common? Mr. Swinton had the courage to write and print the truth in his retirement speech a generation ago as follows, quote, there is no such thing at this time of the world's history in America as an independent press. You know it, and I know it. There is not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. I am paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper I am connected with. Others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the street looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of journalism is to destroy truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race, humanity, for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. When will we, the people, come to know it? And what is folly? Is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, the stockholders of the non-federal Federal Reserve Bank, who also own the mainstream media, and who manipulates, who becomes president and Congress with their influence. We are jumping jacks. They will pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. End quote. William says in his letter, based on my intellect and intuition combined, I believe Mr. Swinton's retirement speech to be the truth, as well as I believe longtime journalist Peter Salinger's quest to expose the truth, especially after what I observed in my military experience and observed cover-ups. I believe David Brinkley's opinion, quote, Mr. Clinton is a bore, end quote, yet he left out, as well as a liar, a miserable role model for our children, an individual with no character or integrity, despite a federal judge, George Howard Jr., putting a gag order on evidence that could link Clinton, Bush, to drug trafficking, Mena, Arkansas. Very well, a criminal. And the list goes on. As well as author to very most likely PDD 25, an unconstitutional, unlawful executive order. Many in our country will in the future most likely consider being a traitor. Americans, the choice is yours. Apathy or open your eyes at the ballot boxes in 1998. Do I believe the FBI? Absolutely no. Do I believe Clinton would come clean if our military did shoot down an American airliner? Absolutely never. And here we've got something very strange going on, ladies and gentlemen. You just wouldn't believe this. And it's not on the 6 o'clock news. The media is not covering this. But this is from the AP by Michael Tighe. Hamilton, Massachusetts. John and Rita Sweeney are staring down federal agents from inside their $1 million French-style mansion. The well-heeled couple are no camouflage-clad survivalists, but their standoff with federal authorities who want to seize their property as repayment of a bank loan entered its second week Monday. A siege has begun, Mrs. Sweeney, 53, who has three adult daughters, said last week. If it's a day, a week, a month, or the summer, we are prepared to stay. The dispute is over the Sweeney homestead, which sits at the end of a winding, woody drive. Climbing bushes of pink and yellow roses dot the 14-acre property. A few roads away, horses run the polo fields. The federal government claims it has owned the property 20 miles northeast of Boston since a 1994 foreclosure sale. A 30-day deadline for the Sweeneys to leave expired last week. There's really not a negotiation here as to whether they can stay, U.S. Marshal Nancy McGilvery said. McGilvery was concerned about violence and said marshals were to meet with Sweeney representatives to discuss solutions. No immediate enforcement of the order was expected. The Sweeneys said they will not leave the property and appealed to friends and groups with anti-government feelings to bring them generators and cellular telephones, and they are looking for volunteers to help patrol the property. When asked about how they're getting food and other day-to-day supplies, the couple were evasive. They survived through the help of family. Their daughters live in Seattle, New Orleans, and near Atlanta, and friends. They seem an unlikely pair to be involved in such a dispute. Why, folks? I don't understand that statement. You know, they're Americans, and they're being wronged, as you will shortly see. And they have a right to protect and defend themselves and their property, even against the government, if the government is wrong. And here we go, once again. Sweeney's great-grandfather, George von Lingerk Meyer, was President McKinley's ambassador to Italy, President Teddy Roosevelt's ambassador to Russia, and Postmaster General and President Taft's Secretary of the Navy. Meyer also built the house on Meyer Lane and helped found the exclusive Myopia Hunt Club polo grounds nearby. It's a legacy. And we're not leaving here, Sweeney, 57, a former United States Army captain and Green Beret, said in a raspy voice. The standoff revolves around a $1.6 million loan the Sweeneys took out in 1987 from a now-failed Lowell Bank. The couple borrowed from ComFed Savings Bank to subdivide their land for homes, but spent most of the money repaying old business debts. The next year, ComFed began foreclosing on the Sweeneys for not repaying the loan. In 1989, the Sweeneys sued ComFed in state court, claiming loan officers reneged on a promise of another $900,000 loan to finish the subdivision. Without monies from housing sales, the Sweeneys couldn't repay the original loan, the family said. The case bounced around the courts for a long time. A state judge in 1991 ordered ComFed to pay the Sweeneys $3.9 million for, quote, unfair business practices designed to deceive the couple, end quote. We had our day in court, and we proved it, Sweeney said. But, you see, ComFed folded. with all the other savings and loans across the country, and the Resolution Trust Corporation of the federal government took over. They, in order to be promoted and get their pats on the back, had to make everything come out even in the long run or make money on all of these deals. And so, guess what? They said the state court had no jurisdiction for a local savings and loan defrauding the Sweeneys, and now they're taking possession of the Sweeneys' property. Can't happen in America? Wake up, buddy. You've been had. Not only can happen in America, it's happening day after day, every day, somewhere in America. The federal government is screwing somebody really bad. Or murdering them. Or breaking up their families, destroying them, taking their children, their property. And in many instances, never even charging them with a crime. This is not the America that I was promised by the founding fathers as their posterity. This is not what they set in the world for me. It is not what I was taught when I was in school. This is not the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen. This is an evolving socialism wherein another Hitler will shortly appear, that everything that happened in Europe after the Nazis rose to power are going to happen all over the world again. You can take that to the bank, because it's as good as gold. Good night, everybody. And God bless each and every single one of you. And please, wake up before it's too late.
There is no reason for you to lose your mind. 'Cause I've seen something that's gonna change our time. If I could, I'd make you understand. If I could, I'd make you understand. There's no hurry, it's gonna come for sure. And I know that someday we're gonna meet.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, to tune in to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network at 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern, for the Home Satellite Radio Show, live via satellite with Dan Morgan. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is My Daddy Station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be, 101.1.